The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The Biden administration plans to allow more ethanol in gasoline in a bid to tame oil prices. Plus, what does Apple's new manufacturing bet on India mean for China? And the war in Ukraine leads to a Russian brain drain.
Predominantly young people are leaving. A lot of people in the tech industry. The Kremlin has been championing the IT sector for years, and this is a big blow.
It's Tuesday, April 12th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Ukrainian authorities say they are investigating a claim by troops in the besieged city of Mariupol that they came under a Russian chemical weapons attack yesterday. No independent evidence of the attack emerged Monday from Mariupol. Officials in the U.S. and U.K. said they were aware of the reports of a potential chemical munition used in Mariupol, but hadn't confirmed their authenticity. The Russian government has not commented publicly about the allegation. The Biden administration plans to temporarily allow high ethanol content gasoline to be sold in the U.S. between June and mid-September in a bid to tame high fuel prices, according to senior administration officials. The decision will allow gasoline with 15% ethanol to be sold this summer, compared to the 10% normally allowed at that time to reduce smog. WSJ reporter Patricia Kausman has more.
Senior administration officials say the move could lead to savings of 10 cents a gallon. But oil industry officials have actually questioned whether the move would lower prices. For one thing, corn prices like oil have seen sharp increases. So oil industry officials say instead of this, Biden should actually find ways to encourage investment in more U.S. oil and gas production.
Environmentalists have also opposed past attempts to raise the summertime ethanol cap because of the additional smog created, but the higher content has long been supported by farmers who grow corn used to make ethanol. The U.S. State Department has ordered the departure of all non-emergency consulate staff and their families in Shanghai amid a growing COVID-19 outbreak. U.S. officials said China's measures to limit the spread of the virus are affecting travel and access to public services. A spokesman for China's Foreign Affairs Ministry said Beijing was, quote, strongly dissatisfied and firmly opposed the U.S.'s politicization of the evacuation. A lockdown imposed on Shanghai's 25 million residents has stretched into its third week, as city health authorities reported more than 23,000 new daily COVID-19 infections. And Japanese automaker Honda says it plans to produce 2 million electric vehicles a year by 2030 and launch 30 EV models by the end of the decade. WSJ Tokyo Bureau Chief Peter Landers says Honda's EV strategy involves product launches to make EVs more affordable and functional.
It's agreed to build an EV with Sony. This would have Sony Entertainment functions, and the car would be manufactured by Honda, with launch planned in 2025. It's also planning to tie up with General Motors on an affordable EV SUV. This would cost less than $30,000 and perhaps be ready for U.S. consumers by 2027.
Honda also announced new investment in solid-state batteries that could improve EV performance. This week, Apple announced it would start making its iPhone 13 smartphone in India. Excluding China, India has now emerged as Apple's top manufacturing bet in Asia. So what is the attraction of India for the world's most valuable company, and should China be worried? WSJ Heard on the Street Asia columnist Megha Mandavia joins us from Bangalore, India, with more. Megha, welcome.
Hi, nice to be here.
Yes, thanks for being with us. So tell us a little bit about Apple's decision here. Just how big of an investment in India does this represent?
So Apple does not divulge any, you know, total investments that they make in India or make in the manufacturing facilities. But this is more of a thumbs up sign to India. It shows that they are growing more confident about India as a manufacturing base. They started with manufacturing iPhone SE, iPhone 11, iPhone 12, and now they've moved to iPhone 13. As you pointed out rightly, that India now accounts for about 3% of its Apple's manufacturing base. And this number is expected to go up to 5 to 7% next year. So while it's still very small compared to China's 95%, it still shows that India is kind of coming out as a potential bet against China.
And is this part of an effort to reduce Apple's reliance on China?
The pandemic has showed us that supply chains are very fragile, and it doesn't do anyone good to, you know, be super dependent on just one region, which is what happened during the pandemic. Most of the electronic manufacturing is based in China, and electronic companies and companies worldwide were dependent on what moves the Chinese government will make. Will they shut down factories? Will they open factories? What are the protocols? So companies are now increasingly become cognizant of diversifying out of China. Obviously, they are not going to cut back completely, because the whole Chinese manufacturing base has been built over the last 3 to 4 decades. It's strong. It's been very resilient, but they want to kind of diversify. So all bets are not just on one region.
Is Apple alone here in starting to move some of its manufacturing to India, or are other companies also doing this? And what might it take for India to receive more of this business?
Smartphone companies, including Xiaomi, already make in India, and more companies are also looking at India as a manufacturing base. It has a huge population similar to China, and the Indian government is also kind of becoming more and more aggressive in wanting to take part of the manufacturing base out of China to India. As I mentioned it earlier, the whole Chinese manufacturing ecosystem has been built on 3 to 4 decades, and it's not going to be easy to uproot all of it and move to another country, for the simple reason that the whole policy framework has been built according to that. The supply chains, the skilled labor, all of this is going to take time to build out in any other country. And the most important thing is that most of the stuff that if they want to build in India is going to be exported. So India needs good export policy, something that will promise them that if you make in India, it's going to be much cheaper than any other country. And unlike China, India is a democracy where, you know, local politicians are not going to take it lightly. They are going to side with the labor unions. They are going to create a ruckus. So those are the sensitivities that manufacturers will also have to take in account.
That was WSJ Heard on the Street Asia columnist Megha Mandavia joining us from Bangalore, India. Megha, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, Russia is experiencing a brain drain as thousands of young professionals leave the country. What effect could that exodus have on Russian society and the Russian economy? We'll have that story after the break.
Hi, I'm Ben Rizzuto, wealth strategist at Janus Henderson Investors. Is a brighter future possible? At Janus Henderson, we think it is. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. We know that this means our thinking and our investments are helping to shape millions of futures. At Janus Henderson, we are committed to helping you invest in a brighter future for the next 90 years and beyond. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Hundreds of thousands of professional workers, many of them young and working in tech, have left Russia after its invasion of Ukraine. Those who study Russia say the pace at which people are departing hasn't been seen since the 1917 revolution, when millions of members of the Russian nobility and educated upper middle classes fled the emerging communist state. WSJ reporter Georgi Konchev says that such a brain drain now could affect Russia's economy for years to come. And Georgi joins us now from Berlin. Georgi, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
So, Georgi, what is the scale of the exodus of professional workers occurring now from Russia? And is this something that started with the invasion of Ukraine?
Yeah, so this exodus we've seen really picked up after the invasion. There's no official data yet, but there's estimates that more than 300,000 people might have left since February 24th when Russia invaded Ukraine. So that's a huge number, just such a short amount of time. But this is, to some extent, a new chapter in this ongoing brain drain that we've seen in Russia for the past decade. immigration began to pick up in 2012 after Vladimir Putin came back to the presidency for his third term, and there were anti-government protests at the time. Later on in 2014, Russia, of course, annexed Crimea from Ukraine, and what followed were pretty serious Western sanctions. People left in droves after that. So we have this like big wave of immigration in the past 10 years, and now this is exacerbating it to a large extent, seeing these huge numbers in such a short amount of time.
So who exactly is leaving, and for what reasons, and for how long is this exodus expected to continue?
Predominantly young people are leaving, professionals. We have a lot of people in the tech industry, which was one of the fastest growing parts of the Russian economy until recently. A lot of people in that industry are leaving. There's some data by this Russian Tech Industry Association that says that about 70,000 people have already left. This is as of end of March. And they're expecting 100,000 more to follow this month. So we're talking big numbers just in tech. And there's many others. There's bankers, there's doctors, there's teachers, there's all kinds of people. And the reasons, of course, they have to do with fears of increased repression from the authorities, and also economic reasons as well. People are kind of afraid for losing their jobs and not having enough opportunities. So a lot of people who were able to do so and had the means were able to leave pretty quickly. Now, the question, of course, is how long this lasts and how big this wave will be. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But judging from this previous experience in the past decade, these waves of immigration, for the combination of economic and political reasons, lead to an increasing brain drain, an increasing amount of departures. And there's no reason why this would be any different. If anything, this would be a record year for immigration from Russia.
And what has the Russian government's response to this been? As you report, Russian authorities may be happy to see people who are critical of the war in Ukraine leave the country, but, you know, hollowing out a dynamic industry like the tech sector can't be viewed as a positive development either, can it?
That's absolutely true. In fact, the Kremlin has been championing the IT sector for years, and this is a big blow. They have, to some extent, encouraged dissenters to leave, but specifically when it comes to these tech workers, they've tried to stem the flow. There's this waiver that Putin granted last month, which basically it's a waiver from military conscription for people involved in the tech sector. And they're also offering tax breaks, cheaper loans, preferential mortgages to people in that sector. So they're really focused on tech. They're trying kind of to stem the flow because this has always been kind of a big focus for them. It has been a very fast rising sector, part of the Russian economy. About 1.7% of the working population is employed in that sector. So this is a big, big part of the economy.
Is it possible to say whether those incentives might actually stop people from leaving Russia? And related to that, as far as you're aware, would any of these professional workers who've left consider returning, say, when things get back to some normality in Russia, perhaps at the end of the war?
It isn't certain, but there's this one survey by this organization called OK Russians, which is a nonprofit helping people to leave the country. And that survey found that only 3% definitely planning to return from those who have left, and about a third of those surveyed are unsure. So there is a small pool of people, according to that survey, that are still potentially coming back, but the majority seem to be leaving for good, or at least for a long, long period of time.
And what would the economic impact of that be on Russia, particularly as it relates to, say, productivity growth?
This is an important question because ultimately these people are highly educated. These are people working in highly paid, advanced jobs. And this is ultimately the most productive part of the labor force. So economists expecting that this would hit productivity and those kind of advanced parts of the economy will be hit. And it will contribute, of course, as well to the lowering the long-term potential of the economy.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Georgi Kontchev joining us from Berlin. Georgi, thank you for the update.
Thank you.
And finally, last fall, the Journal reported on the phenomenon of teen girls showing up in hospitals and clinics with sudden motor and verbal tics, seemingly related to videos they watched on TikTok, including TikTok videos of people who said they had Tourette syndrome. Now, new research supports doctors' earlier theories that girls who developed tics during the pandemic had pre-existing mental health issues, making them susceptible to other disorders. Our family and tech columnist, Julie Jargon, says these issues have mostly been affecting adolescent and teenage girls, and she explains how those affected can be treated.
What a lot of these girls were actually diagnosed with was what's called a functional neurological disorder. And the way that that differs from Tourette syndrome is that it's not tied to an underlying disease, whereas Tourette syndrome, you know, has an underlying nervous system disorder. So what they found to be helpful for these girls is cognitive behavioral therapy, which is kind of a form of talk therapy in which kids can learn how to control their thoughts and unlearn this behavior.
A spokeswoman for TikTok said it had consulted with experts who have cautioned that correlation does not mean causation when it comes to tics and the company's video sharing platform. To hear more about this story, we've left a link to our sister podcast, Tech News Briefing, in our show notes. And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.